Welcome to Voices in Value-Based Care. I'm Beth Hauck. Thanks for tuning in. The movement to value-based care is revolutionizing how healthcare providers get reimbursed for delivery of care. In this program, we're going to explore stories from the field about how real organizations are dealing with this change. You can follow the show on Twitter at #VoicesInVBC and follow me on Twitter at BA Hauck. On the program today, I talk to my friend and colleague, Matt Fusen, from SA Ignite about the final rule of the 2019 MIPS program was finalized. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Beth. It's an honor to be here. I'm assuming this is your inaugural episode that you invited me to.
You are the first person from SA Ignite that has gotten to be on the show. So this is a
big honor. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
And so, of course, with that comes high expectations from our audience. So we're excited to talk today. First off, I, of course, know you, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit about your quick background and what you do at SA Ignite?
Sure. So I spent a big portion of my earlier career on the payer side at two of the bigger Blue Cross Blue Shield plans in the country. So I got a really good perspective what it looks like to be sitting on the payer side, looking at the provider side and interacting, and then wanted to get the opposite perspective. So about 5 years ago, I shifted and have been provider focused, and it is great to kind of have the optics of both sides. And in those 5 years, I've been really focused on the transition of value-based care, not only with MACR and MIPS, but also all of the CMS Innovation Center models that have been going on over the years, and more in the commercial space, they keep moving toward value-based care. At SA Ignite, I am accountable for our sales and marketing organizations and work very closely with our product and customer success teams to bring everything that we're learning and hearing about out in the field back in so that we can keep increasing and improving what we're doing both on the solution side, as well as help contribute to your area, the customer success side.
Thank you so much. Well, today we're going to dig in specifically to the final rule that was dropped right on time on November 1st. Maybe we'll get a chance to draw from some of your experiences as we make commentary about some of the changes that CMS did put in that rule. So I guess let's just launch right in. Tell me what you think are some of the just biggest changes that came out in that rule from 2018 to 2019.
Sure. A couple of the big areas, and we'll see this theme throughout as we talk about this, is this really has become a mature program. So the first couple of years, it was always kind of like a crystal ball between 1 year to the next. What's going to happen? What major fundamental portions are going to change? What we've seen now in the 2019 rule is CMS really kind of settling in and giving us a lot more forward-looking as opposed to here's what we're doing this year, don't know what's next, forward-looking through the five-year transition period that Congress approved earlier this year. So two changes to the performance thresholds. The basic performance threshold started at 3 in 17. Went to 15 for 2018, now is increasing to 30 for 2019. Of course, that means anybody that scores below a 30 is going to have a negative adjustment on their claims in the payment year. Anybody above 30 is going to have a positive adjustment. That, CMS tells us, we can expect to increase 15 points every year through the end of the transition period. So that'll take us to 60 because they're anticipating the mean or median score at the end of that will be around mid to upper 60s. The other threshold that is in play is the exceptional performance bonus threshold. And that really, for this year, for 2019, I should say, is really more important than the first one we talked about. So in 2017 and 2018, the performance exceptional performance threshold was at 70. For 2019, that increases to 75. The reason that's important is because the number of clinicians and organizations that will need to share that exceptional performance bonus shrinks, which means then there's more money for those individuals that are up in that room. So what this means financially is for 2017, the max incentive turned out to be 1.88%. For 2018, we're anticipating right around 2%. But then for 2019, through a combination of both of those thresholds going up, the max incentive now is estimated to be 4.7%. So we're finally starting to see the money on the table that Congress had envisioned all the time when they started MACRA. And we anticipate that trend will continue, because when we roll into 2020, that performance threshold we know is going to go to 45. And every time that goes up, we're going to see more and more people below that line, which contributes more money to the people above the line.
I can tell you from talking to the customer base that they're, of course, happy that that all of their hard work will be rewarded financially, you know, kind of finally. Not that 2% is nothing. It's certainly just not what they had expected when they invested all their time and efforts in this program. What do you think? Do you think that the CMS did enough with it?
So when we're talking to everybody out in the field, one of the things that we see is hesitation. Okay, I hear you that CMS is saying that it'll be 4.7%, but the very, you know, limited history we have is it's been significantly lower. The good part is it's kind of basic math that can show the 4.7. So it's not necessarily CMS saying, oh, we plan on giving you this much, but then they can make some change. But there is basic hesitation. I can tell you, though, at 4.7, as we're doing financial impact analysis to people, for people, and it's not just the max score, it's really any score above that 75 threshold for exceptional performance. When we run the financials and they see what each additional point over 75 is worth, it does have an impact, and it does have people starting to say, okay, that is real money. That is worth the effort that we're putting in. So I think there's a little bit of hesitancy, a little bit of wait and see, but at the end of the day, when they see what's available, they're excited and are ready to go after it.
What are some of the other big impacts? I did hear and know this from obviously following the rule, but also hearing some of the reaction from our customer base about the eligibility. Tell me a little bit more about how eligibility is changing.
So there's a couple components to that. In 2019, it was the first performance year of MIPS that CMS and the Secretary of HHS had the opportunity to expand the clinicians. It was hard to tell if they would do that, again, based on the transition period being extended to 5 years. They not only expanded it, but they even expanded it more from what they proposed in the proposed rule in the spring. So ultimately, there are 6 new clinician types included in MIPS. So that expands the breadth of MIPS. The other path that they took that ultimately expands eligibility is looking at an opt-in. So there were a lot of clinicians, and there's a couple variations of when this would come into play, but a lot of clinicians are saying, hey, I could do really well here. The low volume threshold set at 90,000, which is pretty high. I'm doing 80, 85,000. And if I can see a, you know, 2, 3, 4+% bump because I know I'm going to perform well, why are you locking me out of that? I want to participate. So for 2019, CMS finalized options so that makes it easy for anybody that would have been excluded in the past, primarily because of that low volume threshold set at 90,000, to participate this year. So again, kind of that this program is maturing. It's here to stay. It's no longer a year over year, you know, what's it going to be? Is it going to stay? Every chance that they have had in this 2019 proposed rule to either set expectations of future years or fundamentally expand the program, they have done. For 2019, CMS is estimating that 800,000 clinicians will participate. That's a large jump from what they were anticipating earlier. And interestingly, a big portion of that is because they were using PQRS data to forecast what NIPS participation would be. In PQRS, many more clinicians did individual reporting. In MIPS, we've seen quite a big shift, and more clinicians and organizations are doing group reporting. So that brings in many clinicians that would have been ineligible on their own. So overall, big picture is they had a chance to expand it and grow the program, and they did exactly that.
Out in the field, we're hearing some really positive things in response to the idea of the opt-in for the low volume clinicians, in particular for organizations that wanted to report individually, but because the only way they were going to get that incentive in the past was if they reported as a group, they're really excited about that change. There's a little bit of mixed, I would say, on the front of the expanded clinician types, and in no small part due to the fact that these are clinician types that just have a different way of practicing medicine, and therefore collecting data in the EHR is also a challenge. So that's something that we're going to be watching really closely.
I would echo that as we're talking to people, very few people have even started like considering the ramifications, right? There's a lot of scenario analysis that needs to go into how do I deal with these additional clinician types now? So it is a bit of work and something you want to get ahead of and not be burdened with trying to figure out during the performance year.
What are some other big things that you're seeing?
So as we get into the specific categories, the biggest change by far is to the promoting interoperability category. So they basically just rewrote the rules for that, and it's become much harder. So of course, over the last few years, you know, it's been a big conversation for many years, interoperability, but of course, last few years, it's really gotten a heavy push from CMS and commitments by EHR vendors. So it would make sense that they update that category. For the first 2 years, what we saw was most people were almost maxing out that score or maxing it out. So 24, 25. That was for a couple different reasons. One, the measures you could use what were equivalent to stage two measures, which most people had already accomplished before MIPS came into play. And there were a lot of points available that were really easy to get. So there was something called base measure that is in fact for 2018. The base score is based off of four measures that are very, very simple. Yes, no, one in the numerator. That got you 50 out of your 100 points. Now I have all my performance measures. I don't really have to perform very well to cobble together my extra 50 points because I had a total of 155 points that I could potentially accumulate. So getting to 100 just wasn't very difficult for many people. For 2019, they've changed it. They've made it completely performance-based. So there are no more base measures. There are no more measures where if I get one in the numerator, then I've proven I have the technical capability to do this, so therefore I'm going to get credit. Now it's all about proving that you're using that technology. So every measure is performance-based. There are 100 points based on the measures. There's two new bonus point measures that only gets you 10, so you have a total of 110 that you could earn. The two new measures are opioid-based. When we did our analysis across our customer base, of course, using some proxies, but what we saw was a drop of anywhere from 6 to 11 points. So people that were at 25 now, kind of no changes in how they're operating, going to be below 20 points. That makes PI a category now that you really got to manage. You really got to have clinicians paying attention to, as opposed to it was just kind of something that was going to take care of itself. That and a drop there, coupled with cost. So cost is going up to 15%, as was expected, and quality came down to 45%. Again, forward-looking, CMS said we can look for a 5% increase in equivalent decrease year over year till we get to the 30-30 balance. And CMS is introducing 8 new episode-based measures for 2019. So it'll be the two measures in play for 18, which are Medicare spending per beneficiary and total per capita costs. Those will stay. And then 8 new measures that are episode-based, generally tied to specific specialties, low case volume threshold, so 10 or 20, depending on the measure. And once you go over that case volume, they're turned on. Those are all going to be performance-based, so they're all going to be out of 10 points. The challenge is CMS isn't providing any data to help organizations understand how they're performing on those in any type of real time. So it's a little bit flying blind. So now you got to say, I got to do everything I can to maximize my value in the other three categories. Because for cost, I'm flying blind and I really don't know where I'm going to be. But the expectation is I definitely am not going to get 15 points. I'm probably going to be around 9 to 11 is what we've seen the average. So you couple that with PI getting harder, with the quality category, not a lot of changes, but clear expectations set that we're going to see benchmarks increase again, like they did between 17 and 18. And you start saying, okay, I could easily go from a score of 100 to 90 and really leave some real money on the table now that we're up 4.7 for the max.
I think you're 100% right in that we're going to really see people really, really focus on the PI and quality categories, recognizing that they don't exactly know what the levers are to move in the cost category. I think that's an expected outcome. The PI category is interesting because I think we've really seen such an evolution here. You know, meaningful use started just to get people to adopt EHRs. And now we've moved all the way through the now third renaming, but all the way to really the focus on interoperability. And so the measures are accordingly focused on interoperability. And we're hearing in the field that while they're happy there's fewer measures and that these are well aligned with where we want to go, just more broadly, they're going to be hard to meet, that they're going to be really hard to implement and get going. So it'll be interesting to see what the score drops do look like.
And, you know, you can kind of look at it as we've been going through 2017, there was really one category that you really had to focus on. The others, cost didn't exist. IA is, you know, very easy to get your full points. As we just talked about, PI or ACI at the time, very easy, so it was quality. Then you move into 2018, and IA and ACI, or PI now, essentially stayed the same. So you had quality to pay attention for, and you have cost, which is hard to really do much about, but it's starting to erode your score. So it's another one you got to pay attention to. 2019, what we see is cost, even on a bigger scale, quality stays the same, got to be on top of that. And now PI, got to be on top of that. So now you're looking at three of the four categories, really going to take effort here. And what CMS said in the rule was in 2020, they plan on updating, revamping IA, because if you're going to have IA as part of the overall MIPS category scores, you either need to do something with it to make it more meaningful, or you're better off just eliminating it, because right now there's nobody that can't score 15 out of 15. So looking at 2020, we're looking at a program that is now 2019 really starts it, 2020 you're full in to what Congress envisioned when they created MACRA in 2015. And we're concerned that there's a bit of a false sense of security in the marketplace, because 2017 was pick your pace, super easy to avoid any penalty. The scoring, because of the reasons we just talked about, was pretty easy. 2018, not a lot of changes, and the threshold only went up to 15. So again, easy. Don't got to really put in a lot of resources if you just want to avoid a penalty. Now we're going into 2019. There's a lot on the table to manage, and it's getting harder. People are looking and saying, oh, MIPS, it's just one program. It's no big deal. In reality, it truly is three different programs that you're managing under an umbrella, and that takes more resources and more time and more energy than what the previous years have required. So a lot of what we're talking to people in the field, and Beth, I know you're talking to our customers about, is don't get stuck in the trap. This is going to be, and we're getting there very quickly, what we all thought it would be in 2016. Make sure it's back on your priority list if it has slid off.
Most certainly. Have you seen any other I call them edge cases, but you know, I think CMS does a good job each year when they refine the rule to addressing some categories of clinician types that were perhaps not well thought out. Any of those kinds of changes to the rule?
The biggest one probably is the ability for hospital-based clinicians to leverage the value-based purchasing data that the hospital submits. So it's a little complicated and confusing, but one of the challenges that everybody has had the first couple of years here at MIPS are my hospital-based clinicians, because they can be within my TIN with all my ambulatory-based clinicians, but they're working at the hospital, they're only working on an acute EHR, and it creates really big challenges with trying to acquire data. It starts to limit some of your reporting options depending on data completeness and what you can do there and where you have to acquire the data. So one of the biggest changes from the how specific and different types of clinicians are treated is this hospital-based facility scoring. So at a high level, if I have 100 clinicians within my TIN and 30 of those are hospital-based clinicians, and if the hospital they're practicing on is participating in the value-based purchasing program, which almost all hospitals are, what CMS has said is they have created or in the process of creating and finalizing an algorithm that says we are going to take the data the hospital submitted, we're going to convert that into relevant MIPS-related data, and then we're going to score those clinicians based on that data. And what this means then is you don't have to worry about submitting data or capturing data or grabbing data for those hospital-based clinicians. In instances where you have a group that is 75% or more hospital-based, you can use that for quality, but you would still have to report PI and IA. In other instances, you can use it as part of what you're reporting. So there's a lot of variations. And if it is something where you have hospital-based clinicians within your organization, you definitely want to understand more and understand your specific scenario, because there are a lot of variations with it. But that's the biggest difference we've seen. And it makes sense, because this has been one of the biggest pain points, is capturing data and acquiring data for hospital-based clinicians.
Yeah, it really has been a pain point. You know, it's sort of a situation where you know as an entity you're supposed to be reporting these clinicians, but then at the same time, the data is just so different because they're hospital-based and not in ambulatory settings. So let's just, we talked a lot about straight MIPS and MIPS for probably more of our non-APMs. What about on the APM side? What does the rule say there that was significant for 2019?
So the biggest thing for 2019 around APMs and advanced APMs specifically is the ability to leverage non-CMS alternative payment models that meet the criteria to be considered an advanced APM. So 2019 is the first year that that's taking effect. CMS has all the rules laid out and talk about, you know, how you can promote essentially a model. Let's say if you're doing an alternative payment model with your Blues plan, and that model meets the criteria, and the criteria essentially is the same as what CMS has for an advanced APM, either the payer can reach out to CMS and submit an application basically to get that approved, or the providers can. Once it gets approved, if it's a multi-year program, it stays approved multi-year. They had a thing where you had to redo it every year, but luckily they got rid of that. And then one of the biggest things there that has not really been rampant in, you know, non-CMS payment models, which is use of certified EHR technology. And that's been viewed as one of the barriers potentially to these other APMs being considered advanced. So in 2019, any CMS advanced APM, 75% or more of the clinician base must be using certified EHR technology. For 2019, for other payer advanced APMs, that threshold at 50, and then goes to 75% very quickly in 2020. that really is going to be interesting to see how many of these are actually approved by CMS, how many people take advantage of them. Remember, you still have to meet your thresholds using a CMS-approved advanced alternative payment model. You can then add on to those with the other payer, but you cannot use just other payer APMs. Not necessarily in the proposed, not in the rule itself, but communications coming out from Secretary Azar around the HHS and what they're thinking around payment models, alternative payment models. And they've made it clear that they are going to do more mandatory programs. So this is a bit of a boomerang. Mandatory programs were headed down the path and were getting implemented when the administration changed a couple years ago. Tom Price came in as the secretary. He was anti-mandatory program, started backing off and canceling mandatory programs. Now they're back full swing. And it's based on the reality that we kind of all knew at the time was, if we really want to move the country forward for value-based care, unfortunately, you're going to have to use mandatory models. It just won't move at any pace without them. So we're expecting to see more of those coming out in later this year, but more next year. The reason that's important is because likely those are being built to meet the criteria of an advanced alternative payment model, i.e. making more people available for that track. The biggest kind of negative feedback right now is there's very limited options for people to be in advanced APMs unless you're in an ACO with two-sided risk. And these mandatory models that are coming will force people into the models, but the good news is it'll likely put them into the advanced APM track and the benefits of that.
Sounds like we have a topic for a future show even.
We do. I'd be happy to be invited back.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today because we covered a lot of ground and I'm happy you were my inaugural guest. And the good news is CMS does a great job of continuing to keep us on our toes by putting out new proposed and then final rules every 6 months or so. So we've got more opportunities coming up.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Matt, and thanks to our audience for tuning in. You can learn more about the show on the programs page on healthcarenowradio.com and lend your voice to the conversation on Twitter at #VoicesInVBC. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at VA Hauk. I'm Beth Hauk, bringing you the voices in value-based care you should hear. Until next time, have a great week.